This is George Tanabe welcoming you to another broadcast of The White Way. One of the reasons why we tell fictional stories is that even though they do not tell real facts, they do tell truths. There is a Buddhist term for this, and it is called expedient means, or hoben in Japanese. The most famous example of this comes from the Lotus Sutra and its story of the burning house. Once there was a rich man who had several sons, and they lived in a big house. One day the man went out, and when he was returning to his house, he saw that it was on fire. He also saw his sons playing in a part of the house that the fire had not yet reached, and he knew he had to get them out as quickly as possible. He called out to them, saying he had beautiful carts for them. In our own time, we might say that he had beautiful cars for them, a Lexus, Mercedes, a BMW. The boys got excited and rushed out of the house, still not aware that the house was on fire. When they were safely outside, they not only realized that the house was on fire, but they also discovered that their father had no carts to give them. The story then asks the obvious question. Did the father lie to his sons? He did not have beautiful carts, and yet he told his sons that he had them. But what was most important, the story says, was for the father to save their lives, and the father resorted to an expedient means in order to get his sons out of the burning house. The lesson of this story is that sometimes we have to tell white lies, not for the purpose of deceiving or taking advantage of people, but in order to save their lives or to help them. Sometimes the ends justify the means. In the great 11th century literary classic, The Tale of Genji, which was the first novel in world literature, there is a famous scene in which Prince Genji encounters a court lady reading romantic stories. He criticizes her for reading fiction. "You're wasting your time," he says, "reading those silly stories made up in someone's imagination. Better for you to read history, to read about facts." The lady defends herself, saying that fictions tell a lot of truths, especially about people's feelings. Genji then admits that he too likes reading romantic fiction, and then goes on to justify it by saying that Buddhists use fiction as expedient means. "The best way to express truths," he says, "especially the truths of our experience, is to write stories. How else will future generations know how we lived, what we really felt in our hearts?" Buddhist literature is filled with stories, myths, and legends. They are not factually true, but they tell important truths. The next story I'd like to tell you is a medieval story found in the Buddhist literature of Thailand. It is called Bimba's Lament, Bimba being another name for Shakyamuni's wife. This story plays on the traditional biography of Shakyamuni. You will remember that he was born into the royal household of the king and queen of a kingdom. Even though he had all the clothes, toys, food, playmates, and anything else that he wanted, he was not happy. He grew up to be a young prince destined to inherit the throne of the kingdom. He was married to a wonderful woman who bore him a son. He had everything, wealth, pleasure, power. And yet he was not happy. So in the middle of one night, he got up and left the palace and started his search for the secret of happiness, a search that would culminate in his enlightenment under a Bodhi tree. That is when he became the Buddha, the enlightened one. Now, the traditional biography always portrays the Buddha in a positive light. But if we think about this story from an ordinary person's viewpoint, we have to say that in abandoning his family, he was an unfilial son, a terrible husband, and an even worse father. He walked out, just like that, in the middle of the night, without telling anyone, without any explanation, without leaving at least a note. It is on this point that the story of Bimba's lament begins, and it is told from the standpoint of a wife whose husband left her, of a woman who had to raise her son as a single mother. The story opens with Bimba looking out the window one day to see that her husband, who has now become the Buddha, the world-honored one, has returned to their hometown. He is accompanied by many disciples who revere him as a great teacher, but she remembers him as the son, as the husband and father who abandoned his parents, his wife, and his son. She does not share in the adulation the others show to the Buddha. The Buddha breaks from the adoring crowd and walks towards Bimba's house. He arrives at the door and asks if he could enter, but she refuses and pours out her lamentations, her sorrow and hurt. "How dare you come back," she tells him, "after you walked out on us without a word. Do you know what the neighbors have said? They said it was my fault. They said you left because I was a bad wife. They speak ill of me, and I have been miserable. How dare you come back? Go back to your followers. You are not welcome in my house." The Buddha tries to explain, saying that he had to leave in order to find the secret to happiness. The cruel irony of it all is not lost on Bimba. Happiness? All you caused me was great sorrow and sadness. It is a dramatic moment. We are not used to seeing the Buddha from his wife's viewpoint, but we understand and sympathize with her lament. She has every right to complain. Although he has become a wise sage, we can still understand perfectly how she sees him as one who jilted her, one who cast her aside, no matter how lofty his motives might have been. And she speaks not just for herself, but for his parents and son, all of whom did not understand why he had left them so suddenly. What will the Buddha do? Will he apologize? Will she slam the door in his face? What she does is totally unexpected and surprising. "Come," she says, and she lets him enter her house. She has him sit in a chair, and then she goes to get a bowl of water, and she kneels at his feet. She unties her long hair, dips it into the water, and washes his feet. That's it. End of story. What are we to make of this? Like any good story, it touches our interest and imagination and invites us to make sense of the ending. My own interpretation is that she is forgiving him. By washing his feet, she is washing away all the wrong that he had done to her, all the hurt that he had caused her. "You were terrible for having abandoned us," she says in effect, "but I forgive you." It is always amazing when people forgive those who have caused them so much harm. We hear stories of people forgiving a murderer for having killed a loved one. This happened recently when survivors confronted Dylan Roof at his first court hearing. Dylan Roof, you might remember, is the young man who had walked into a church in Charleston and shot 9 people dead in cold blood. One by one, the relatives stood up in court and expressed their hurt and sorrow, and then forgave the young man for killing their loved ones. The forgiveness of sins is a well-known and important part of Christianity. But what about Buddhism? One of my students, who was a Buddhist herself, once asked me if there was forgiveness in Buddhism. "I have never heard anyone in my temple talk about forgiveness," she said. Well, here, in the story of Bimba's lament, we clearly have a Buddhist story of forgiveness. And what is interesting about it is that the wrongdoer was not some criminal, but the Buddha himself. Although we do not usually explain it this way, Amida's vow is all about forgiveness. The equivalent of sin in Buddhism is bad karma. And everyone has bad karma. Although the goal of Buddhist moral practice is to achieve perfectly good karma, we are all imperfect bumbu, ordinary beings, and are not capable of moral perfection. According to the teachings of early Buddhism, we are doomed to repeat life after life as we struggle unsuccessfully to become morally perfect. But in Mahayana Buddhism, there are rituals for destroying our bad karma. Or, in the case of Jodo Shinshu, we can still be reborn in the Pure Land, even if our karma is not perfectly good. This is the power of Amida's vow. This is the power of forgiveness. Thank you for listening.